This is Icon Art Radio, and I'm here with co-host Alan Cobb. And Alan sent me an email a week or so ago that was very curious. It was about someone who had lost his iPhone, is that right? That how he kept connected with everything and everybody.
Yeah.
And he decided that because there was some upgrade or something coming, he was going to wait a week before.
Well, he had ordered the new iPhone, and he had then lost his old iPhone, and he couldn't replace the old iPhone with an old iPhone because it would be pointless because the new one was coming in a week or two. So he spent 2 weeks without his iPhone. And I guess it's been a few years since he's been without an iPhone. And this guy, who was a perfectly rational, you know, normal-sounding human being and perfectly articulate in his blog, was talking about how it changed his life being without it. He felt lost. He felt, you know, abandoned. He said that he had it set up so that whenever a tweet came in, his cell phone would vibrate for a moment, and he'd have it in his pocket, his iPhone, and going through the day, it would, you know, there'd be a little blip from Twitter every minute, practically, because he had a whole lot of people that he was following and a whole lot of people were following him. And not having that little blip drew his attention to the fact that nobody knew where he was now, and he didn't know where his friends were. Now, of course, with the phone in his pocket, he didn't know where his friends were until he took his phone out and actually looked. But he knew that he could know where his friends were at a glance, at any time. Hundreds of people, I guess. And he knew that they knew where he was. And now suddenly he knew that they didn't know where he was, and it was very troubling. And he went on
also talked about, like, he could, any question he needed to know, he could, like, ask
Right, he didn't have Google, he didn't have Wikipedia, and he felt like he was abandoned, and he was on his own, and kind of naked, and exposed, and vulnerable, and helpless. And, you know, clearly he wasn't saying that he actually was vulnerable and helpless, but he said he felt that way, and it took the better part of the 2 weeks for him to get used to this experience that the entire rest of the planet, including everyone who currently has an iPhone, say 5 years ago, was considering to be normal life. You know, of course you don't have Google and Wikipedia and Twitter and Facebook all, you know, bombarding you with little updates every few seconds. But it just raised this question of, you know, what is our vision of the environment that we live in? And this technology has added some little dimensions to that and given us a different way of experiencing community and a different way of feeling like we're connected to our fellow human beings. I know when I was a kid, it was a really big deal when I was finally old enough to use the telephone without having to ask permission, and I could call my friends. And of course, that's the only thing I ever wanted to do at that age. I was like, wow, I'm calling my friends, you know. And we'd arrange to meet somewhere, and then we would meet. And we only lived, you know, a quarter of a mile or less away, and we could, you know, we could practically shout from one house to the other, not quite. But having that communication was exciting and very important to us. And I remember at the time, every now and then some toy walkie-talkie product would appear. And I would think, wow, that would be so fantastic to be able to actually not even use the telephone. And it just, you know, unfortunately in the 1950s, it's as far as it went. It was 25 feet of you know, wire hooked up between two walkie-talkie shaped toys. Right. There wasn't any radio going on. And, you know, when Citizens Band Radio appeared on the scene, suddenly even adults had this opportunity to communicate in a new way that was real time, and they jumped on it, and it made a big difference in their lives. And for certain cross sections of people, like truckers, it became an essential, indispensable part of their way of life. And I would wager that if you could somehow turn off all of the cell phones, turn off all the cell phones and CB radios on trucks, these guys would be pulling off the road. They would be lost without it. They don't know where the cops are. They don't know where their buddy is. They don't know, you know, how far it is to the next place where a couple of them are going to stop and have coffee. And, you know, my scenario there is a little weak in terms of technology, because now obviously they're using cell phones, not just CB radios. But the CB radio was kind of the next step. It was like a handheld radio for the public. Until they came along, it was only commercial organizations who could have a license to operate a private radio. And so citizens' band, you know, eventually gave way to cell phones. And over the last 10 years, cell phones have really become completely reliable and completely usable, except for some AT&T services in the local area. If you have an iPhone, you have a bit of a reception problem. But, you know, that's going away shortly when other carriers, you know, can get involved in that particular product. And the iPhone competitors are cropping up very nicely. They no longer have the largest market share. But it's interesting because it's gone beyond just being able to communicate. We now have what for a while was called push communications, where some service on the internet, you know, gives you information without you asking for it and pushes it into your computer if you're connected. In fact, just a few years ago, say 5 or 6 years ago, being connected to the internet all the time was a new thing. Right. You know, having a persistent connection, it was something people talked about. I'd finally have gotten away from dial-up, where you thought twice before you connected to the internet, and it made a difference, and it was a nuisance, and it wasn't always a good connection, and things like that. And now everyone's connected, but now we've gone a step beyond that, and we're connected wirelessly, and we've gone a step beyond that, where we're connected wirelessly with something in our shirt pocket. And that's reaching critical mass, and it changes the whole paradigm of how we interact. And this young man's experience of, you know, loss and ennui and depression and stuff,
disorientation
from losing his iPhone, is really, you know, he's the first generation that's had an opportunity to experience that. But everyone from now on will be experiencing that, especially the people who make heavy use of the you know, kind of narrow bandwidth, short-term push communications like Twitter and Facebook updates and things. You can have your phone, you know, give you a little buzz every time somebody updates their Facebook page, or your Facebook page receives something. And the same with Twitter. And then there are other websites that are providing aggregating services that will keep track of all your social networking subscriptions and centralize the notifications, so that you might join 10 different kinds of social networking operations and have all of your updates hitting in real time throughout the day. And it's not necessary. In many cases, it doesn't even really serve any practical purpose, but it will. It's like movable type. Well, who needs to produce a new book every week? You know, what's the big deal with that? And now we have publishing companies producing hundreds of books a week, and movable type has turned into electronic type, and it's the natural order for the human expression to be in print form on paper or on the screen within seconds all the time. So what I'm wondering is what kind of implication does this have for human expression?
People aren't even reading books anymore, and even reading text is changing because so much of our information comes just verbally.
Yeah.
We get our news from cable news. We get our news. What I'm saying is that this Twitter thing, the kind of like everyone always connected up, always talking, mm-hmm. and it's a different way of relating in the now, in present time.
Yeah.
And it's going to affect the way we live in our expressive lives, coming from the idea of an artist.
Well, that's what I mean. What does it say about how people who have been plugged in their whole lives at this level and the next levels, which will be coming along in another 2 years and another 4 years and another 6 years, what kinds of personal expression will they value? Which, you know, is it important not to express yourself in any way other than in this very temporary form that we call Twitter? Or does it just not matter? And if you want to express yourself creatively, does Twitter have much to do with that? Or is that just how you let people know that you've got something happening someplace? Or does it become a substitute for poetry, for talking, for social exchange?
Well, it seems like that people are slipping into this like one-liner relating.
Yeah, that's the Twitter paradigm. And I'm not sure it has to stay that way. I think, you know, live video is probably going to be just as easy to do as tweeting now.
Right, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking also that we're leaving like the printed word behind in a way, because what's impressing me is how we're like, there's a audio, video, and text sort of like organic thing that we're living in the middle of in real time now, and communicating. Before, you know, someone would go off somewhere and prepare something to deliver to someone else.
Right.
It's all so immediate now.
Yeah, that's one of the huge changes. People are doing things without any preparation, without any thought of the consequences, without any interest in its persistence. Although, ironically, it all persists, too, because if it's on the web, it'll stay there for quite a while before it becomes unlocatable. And people are not paying much attention to that yet. I think after people start getting in trouble for things they said 10 years ago on Twitter, that will be interesting. But there's another aspect to this, which is the notion of why we actually like to just have casual conversations with each other. People who are just chatting, two guys sitting at a bar and, you know, they're saying things like, you know, what about those bears? And in a sense, they're not really talking about football. They're not really talking about a particular team. They're really just sharing a moment of reality with each other. And more profoundly, they're sharing a process of reinforcing the fact that they exist. Like, for example, that cell phone that just rang.
There we go. I can't get away
intruding.
From it. People trying to connect.
But when we talk about the weather and sports and things like that, we're primarily saying, here I am, I see you, you're with me, we exist, I exist, you confirm that I exist, I confirm that you exist. And if you go for a while without conversation and then you listen to people talking, it's fairly easy to hear that that is, in fact, a large part of what they're saying. Is they're just saying, yeah, here we are, here we are. We recognize each other. We confirm each other's reality. And what the connectedness of people with contemporary multimedia cell phones and multipurpose cell phones, what that connectedness does is it provides that affirmation of your existence on a semi-automated basis so that you don't have to find someone and sit down and talk to them and say, yep, I exist, you exist, we're still here, I feel safer now that I know we're in it together, kind of. because you've got this little vibration happening in your pocket, and you don't even have to look at it, you don't have to read the tweet, you just hear this little burp, and you know somebody knows you're there. And somebody's confirming that they're where they are. And these things, they know literally where you are. They know your location. So it's a rather intimate connection that's not that far removed from sitting next to somebody at a bar stool. So it's not really surprising that this guy in the email that we started out talking about is feeling disconnected from reality, because that conversational component that helps us continually reaffirm each other's existence was in his pocket, and now it's silent. And the confirmation that he is real isn't there. And I think humans need that. They need to hear on an ongoing basis that it's still happening and that they are not just adrift in a sea of sensory impressions with no apparent direction to it.
So you talked earlier about where this could go in the future.
The
first came to my mind was, do we need some kind of like balancing thing? Do we need to cherish alone time?
Yeah.
And do the arts provide something of that stepping back and finding oneself and then making some kind of a statement in one's cave of the studio that's a actual reflected upon by oneself statement? I mean, to me, that's kind of an important component here, and that's probably kind of the role that the arts do play.
Yeah.
But you were talking about the extension forward into the future, where people would probably have implants in their heads and be like even connected up in a more extensive way.
Right. Well, it seems almost inevitable. I don't see any particular reason why we won't all end up with implants. People who are older are going to say, well, that's an invasion. I don't want a bloody implant. You know, what a horrible idea. But if you've grown up being connected this way, as people are now, 10 years from now, those are the old people or older. And the younger people are even more connected as soon as they get whatever it is that we use 10 years from now. 30 years from now, what a nuisance to have to carry something. What a nuisance to have to look at.
Just for the audience that's listening on the radio to our conversation, by the way, this is Icon Art Radio. If you didn't,
this didn't seem to have anything to do with art.
We are interested in communication and the environment in which communication expression lives. What exactly are we talking about if we're talking about an implant? How would that work?
Well, we're saying that the functionality of a contemporary multimedia state-of-the-art cell phone, which is a little bit new this year, you know, a little bit flashy, you can take videos, you can do video telephone communications now with the newest generations. Because it's got two cameras in it, one pointing at you and one pointing at the world. And so you can talk to somebody on the phone and they can be looking at you through the camera that's pointing at you while it's in speakerphone mode. And you can surf the web and it knows where you are physically on the planet. It's giving you essentially GPS information and telecommunications and web access. And it's got a huge amount of storage, so it can contain lots and lots of contact names and numbers and hundreds of thousands of tunes and video tapes, you know, video recordings and games and books and magazines. And all these things can be updated in real time while you're walking around without you thinking about it. And one of the few weak links left is simply battery life. You shouldn't have to keep recharging the thing. Well, a lot of those limitations, the fact that you have to hold it up in front of you and look at it, is something that if you could do it hands-free, would be more convenient. If you're driving, maybe you shouldn't be using it at all, but if you're driving, you'd certainly want it to be hands-free. If you're working on fixing your TV set, and you reference something online that's got photographs of what you're working on and step-by-step instructions on how to repair it, you don't want to have to hold the book next to you, or you don't want to have to hold the iPhone next to you. You want to just be looking at your work. So I would imagine a pair of glasses with a heads-up display that you can see when you want to instead of seeing through the glasses. So maybe one eye is a screen and the other eye is seeing through the lens. And we might learn how to project that image into the retina somehow electronically without having to use glasses. The cell phone circuitry, if you take the battery off of something like an iPhone and you take the display off the front and you remove the buttons on the sides and you look at what's left, it's like it's little more than a playing card from a deck of cards. It's practically nothing. So if the body can provide bioelectric power to run it, and we have some way of plugging it into the nervous system so that we don't need to wear earphones and viewing devices and things like that to see the images and hear the sounds, then we're plugged in. And there's no technological barrier to doing that I can see. The technology hasn't moved far enough, but it's moved in that direction enough to make it clear that it's not impossible, not even close to impossible. If the worst case scenario is that it's implanted so that you don't have to keep changing batteries and recharging batteries, and it's so small that you don't even know you're wearing the implant under your skin somewhere, and it's updatable by electromagnetic induction or something, so that you don't have to have plugs in your body. Although maybe we will end up with that. Certainly plenty of sci-fi writers have considered it. I don't think it's a big stretch of the imagination to think that 30 years from now it'll be commonplace. And the resistance to doing it now is from old fogies who are saying, I wouldn't dream of such a thing. Yeah, well, you don't need to. 30 years from now, they'll all have dreamt of such a thing for so long it won't mean anything. It'll be obvious. It's just a better way of doing it. So what I was wondering is, what happens when we've all gotten that implant and we're all getting updated on a regular basis and we're all connected and we all know where all of our friends are just by somehow gesturing with our mental faculties and the information appears in front of us, and a 30-year evolution of Google is there to look things up and a 30-year evolution of Wikipedia is there to concentrate information on every subject, and cameras and audio, and probably cameras that see far beyond the visible light spectrum that we're accustomed to seeing. Why not have an infrared camera included and an ultraviolet camera included? And why not be able to hear what dogs hear and bats hear if you need to? Just turn up the frequency response and you can hear it. It's nothing. It's just more technology refined a little bit. But what happens when Solar Max hits and there's this huge solar storm, which happens every so often anyway, and Solar Max is particularly intense that year, maybe the biggest Solar Max in 5 centuries, and all the satellites go dead, and all of these implants suddenly are disconnected? I think you'll find people falling down in the streets in shock and horror from suddenly being blind. And they won't be blind by our standards, but they'll be blind by the standards of people with implants, because suddenly there's no internet, there's no connection, they don't know where they are. They can't look at the map in their mind and see their location on it. They can't find any of their friends. They can't call anyone. They can't be called by anyone. And they're utterly alone, like humans actually are and always have been. And I think it would make a great science fiction story. I'm not the kind of person to be the one to write it, but I could, provide the premise.
Well, he's pitching any of you out there that want to pick up on
this
story.
Yeah, it'd be great to have a...
It sounds so sci-fi to someone like me, who's a kind of... always lived a fairly simple, untechnological life. But I think that when I see the young people coming up today and the technological lifestyles that they lead, and example that you gave off the internet, it is a whole new sci-fi world out there.
Yeah. And the thing is, these things aren't technology after they have evolved enough. As technology evolves, it loses the name technology, and it becomes simply how you do it. The technology of smelting iron ore and producing raw iron and forging it at the blacksmith shop, that was technology when you had to be exposed to it at that level in order to do anything with it. But later, that stuff's all taken care of by layers of technology that come between you and the raw iron, you know, the pig iron and the raw ore and stuff. So all you're really aware of is the fact that you can get a Swiss Army knife at the store. And that, you don't think of that as technology. It's just a Swiss Army knife. It's got a screwdriver and a bottle opener and a saw. And, you know, it's cool. And you just have one. And people who've had cell phones around them for their entire lives don't think of cell phones as being technology. It's just a product with some features. And 10 years from now, everyone alive will have been around cell phones for so long that they won't be thinking of it as technology. When it starts to be implantable, it'll be even, you know, that'll be new for a little while, and then it'll be old hat. It's, you know, technology becomes normal. First it's magic, then it's technology, then it's just stuff, just normal stuff that you take for granted. And if science and engineering and so forth all continue moving in a straight line, the way they have been for the last century or two, then these kinds of predictions are, I think, almost inevitable. Something might come along to disrupt that straight line. Social values might suddenly really change, and we would prefer not to continue in that direction. Or something might interfere with maintaining our you know, energy-based lifestyles and things like that. But for that, time will tell, and any prediction you want to make is as valid as any other.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.